Cool. Well, welcome to the Jeffrey Von Stetten Epic Podcast Experience. Tonight, we're going to be trying to keep it short and sweet, and I want to talk to you about a subject that I have decided to call juggernauting. That is my phrase, and it's about this dynamic that I see take place in the natural products industry that I think is kind of messed up, and I wanted to try to discuss that a little bit because I want to help people be aware of it, and I want to help them be aware of what's going on out there when you try to shop in these stores and you try to do all this stuff. And there's some dynamics that's kind of messed up. And you have to ask yourself, you're like, well, what is juggernauting? Well, it's exactly like it sounds. So, you know, I thought of juggernaut like this big, giant, massive thing from, like, it's a general term, but I always think of it from, like, X-Men, from Juggernaut, from that big, freaking gumpy idiot that just goes busting through walls, which is kind of cool because, like, once he gets going, he just can't stop. And it's kind of awesome. We all sort of want to have a little bit of that, like, momentum. You're like, just try it. Try it. Just try to get in my way. But, you know, when it comes to the natural products industry, it's a dynamic that I think that sort of sucks. And I think people should be aware of it in the way that they try to shop and the way that they try to do things. So, what is juggernauting, Jeff? Well, juggernauting is the practice of giant, massive companies utilizing and observing the sales of an independent or small type of product out in the natural products industry, and then deciding that, you know what, we want to do our knockoff version of it. But here's the thing, you know, usually when you're buying ingredients and you buy certain things, they're all based on volume. So if you're paying, you know, if you are a tiny little itty bitty teeny, just minuscule microscopic grassroots company that's just trying to be cool and trying to make the industry better, you know, you can buy things in whatever, a couple hundred pounds at a time, and you'll pay whatever, $15 a pound. But if you are a big, massive company and you're trying to buy this particular substance, well, you can buy 6,000-7,000 pounds of something at a time, which would be a lot, I mean, but maybe not, of a particular substance, and you'll pay about like $7 or $8 a pound. And then when you're, because you have this type of budget and because you have this type of money, you can go out there and you can create a total knockoff of this small, you know, company's product, and do your version of it, your copycat product, and you can offer it to consumers and you can offer it to people out in the natural products market for just a fraction of a cost. So you can, you know, somebody that's buying something at $15 a pound and you're like, okay, wait a minute, so let's add on the cost of a bag or a bottle, there's like another buck, and then let's add on at least a buck and probably add on, you know, a label that's probably like, you know, 20 cents to 40 cents or something, unless you have, unless again, you can run a whole bunch of them, in which case you can get them down to about 10 cents a label or something, but you have to do 30,000 of them or something crazy, or buy a plate, which means you have virtually no means of changing anything on your graphics. You have to buy a new plate every time that you want to change your graphics. There's not a lot of companies that are still using those. But anyways, let's say that you're doing that, and for a small company, I mean, your final product, if you're looking at a small, like a grocery product, those are normally 33% on about the margin. That's what a lot of companies like to look for. So, you know, when I say 33%, that means, think of it double. Think of all the numbers as double. So a 50% margin means that if I sold it to you for 10 bucks, that I'm giving you the okay to sell it for 20. So at a 33% margin, you know, if it's if it costs you 20 bucks to make it, you're going to sell it wholesale at a 33% margin. You know, 10% would be an extra $2. 10% is $2 of 20. 20% is $4. 30% is $6. 33% would be about $6.50. So you're giving someone the okay to sell it for, you know, whatever, just, you get the idea. So, in a company can come along and basically totally lowball you. They'll say, okay, wait a minute, we can buy this for $8 a pound. Well, we buy thousands of bottles at a time, so our bottles are only, or bags, or our baskets, or whatever the heck they're doing, and, you know, they'll just be able to lowball you so that their final production cost is only, you know, like, whatever, Sorry, I did the math wrong on that other one, by the way. I was thinking $20 production cost. So if you're looking at wanting to do it at a 50% margin, it would be like $40 wholesale, and then a company would probably want to do that at 33% above that. So you'd be looking at a $70 product or something. But a company can come along and just say, okay, here, we bought this for this ingredient for $8 a pound instead of your 15. We buy all our stuff really cheap, so our bottles are 50 cents, our labels are like 5, so it only costs us about $9 or $10 to make this product. So we're going to put our wholesale margin up at about maybe $16, which means that, we'll sell it to you for $16, which means that final product, even if you really mark up the fuck out of it and make it be about a $50% margin, you're looking at something that's only about a $36 or $40 product. And when you start allowing that kind of stuff in the industry, so you're looking at one company that can produce it for a final product that costs the consumer $40, or a small, tiny grassroots company where the final cost will be about $76. And if you put them on the same shelf, what do you think a customer is going to pick? They're like, well, this looks identical. I'm going to take the $40 one. Totally. I love these guys. They're my buddies. But yeah, brother man's got to pay the bills. Boom. That's it. And that's where it all happens. And what happens in this kind of industry is that if we keep allowing that type of commingling of products, if you have a store that is trying to carry products from companies where they have a $2, $3, $4, $10 million budget, and then you put them side by side next to these little itty bitty tiny grassroots companies, and there really aren't any small grassroots companies that are out there on the shelf anymore. If you'll notice, for the stores that tried to adopt that local emphasis, it really didn't turn out too well. And especially in the vitamins and supplements and body care department, kind of a total train wreck. A couple of soap companies made it, and a few cosmetic companies that really marked the living hell up out of their products made it, and that's it. They just said, this isn't working too good. We're just going to kind of do this for grocery and kind of maybe emphasize some of this, but yeah, not really a good way to do it. And this dynamic really affects what you have to do. And I've seen it happen over and over. Companies where you'll have this cute couple and they make this really kick-ass chia and raw macaroon bar, and then some other company is like, oh, hey, I like this company's chia and macaroon bar. Let's do a knockoff of it. Well, they're tiny, and they do everything by hand, and they have no machinery, and they're renting out space in a kitchen, and they don't have their own cost of doing things. And it's like, well, their final product costs a hell of a lot of money. And it's like, and this other company, they're like, well, we can just do that over in this room, and we'll make this product, and we're going to buy it at blah, 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 blah. And it costs like a fraction of the cost because they can just buy everything. And you know what? If the product fails, if their copycat product fails, it's like, whatever. We tried it. It sucked. Move on. And I've seen that happen with a whole bunch of companies. Some energy drinks and a couple of salad dressings. We had some specialty oils. I've seen that happen over and over and over. And I think that that's really, really, really fucked up. And I don't think that that's something that you should do. I don't think that's something that you should allow. So I'm really encouraging staff members, when you see this one single thing, and I want the whole natural products industry to start doing and asking this one question. I want you to just really strike at the heart of what you see out there. And the way that you do that is that the next time somebody presents a product to you, the next time somebody asks you where this new company came from. And I mean really specifically with new ones. It's like, if you've got a good idea of a well-established company, that's okay. That's just fine. There's a lot of really cool big companies that are out there. I don't mean it like that. What I mean is that when you've got a brand new company that shows up just out of the blue, I saw a cool body care company that showed up just right out of the blue the other day, and I was like, damn, who are these guys? And then my very next question is, where'd the money come from to launch this company? Where did it come from? Where did the money to launch this company come from? And that's the elephant in the living room for our whole industry. That is the one single question that you never, ever get the answer to. When you're working on the floor, you're working in you know, talking to people about vitamins and supplements, or if you're in receiving or you're over there working the register, that is the question that absolutely nobody can roll up on you with. And that's the first answer that you should learn. That's the first answer that you should know, because it should dictate the way that you interact with this company. You absolutely should not be asking small companies with a budget of $0 to $50,000, sometimes $30,000, sometimes even $10,000, these tiny, minuscule companies, mom and pop soap companies and handcraft oil companies or candle companies and stuff. You shouldn't be asking them for the same discounts that you're asking a $10 million company with $5 million of investors, or a company that's gone public and has collected a couple million from some shareholders, optimistic shareholders at that. You shouldn't do that. And I think that's wrong. You need to break it down into categories. And the next time that you see that, the next time that you see a product, you say, well, where did the money for this company come from? Where did this come from? And then also, if you see, because it can be a conglomerate. And the thing that people don't understand is that they have the wool constantly pulled under their eyes. If you walk through the health food stores that are out here and you walk through the body care department and you see 7, 8, 9 different companies that are out there, there is a single company, and it's not even a company that gives a shit about body care and making things awesome. It's an investment firm, okay? Just an investment firm. And they're the ones that own 9 different body care companies that are right there, that are common companies in most of the health food stores that you walk around. 9 fucking companies. That is a lot, dude. That is a lot. When you're talking about a walkthrough or an aisle or a shelf space that really is only the size of a large walk-in closet with a few extra feet, I mean, it's really not that big. And so when you have that kind of space that gets taken up, that's not cool. And over in vitamins, I mean, you have one single company that owns literally like 14 or 15 different companies, Nutraceutical. I'm just going to say their name because I don't care. They're huge. They don't care about me, but I care about them. And they own everything. They own all kinds of stuff. If you look at private labelers for some of the house brands, it's normally the same company that's doing the house brands. So when you pull these big giant companies out, you don't have a lot that's left. And that's why, when you see this type of stiff competition going on out there, that's why a lot of companies just say, well, fuck this. I'm just going to sell my company. Because you know what? The offer that they just made me, you know, look at Burt's Bees, a family-owned tiny little Burt's Bees company that made these great little products out of, you know, bee stuff, like sold to Clorox. That's who owns these guys, Clorox, okay? And you have to say, like, how could you do that? How could you sell your company to Clorox? Well, the thing is that it's not a tempting offer if there's nothing to tempt with, okay? You have to make something look appealing to somebody in the first place, because if what they've got going on is better than what you offer them, it's no deal. It doesn't matter. They don't care. So then you have to say, well, listen, Burt's Bees, it looks like if you continue at the rate that you're going, you know, you're going to probably have about the next decade of really, really hard work. You're going to run yourself into the ground. You may or may not have enough money to buy some of the ingredients that you need, and you'll probably clear, you know, $2 or $3 million worth of profit with about $15 million worth of money that has gone through your hands in this tiny little bit of turnaround that you have, and it might be a little bit bigger or smaller. We're offering you $5 million right now to just give us the company, tell us how you do stuff, give us the dynamics of the whole thing. You can stay on as a consultant to make sure that everything still runs right. We will pay you a salary on top of the $5 million that you did this for the time that you do consulting and answering some blogs and things, or answering letters or offering some guidance to our board of directors or to our research and development or our ingredient sourcing department, you know, offer some guidance on that, maybe with marketing, however that kind of falls, and you'll still get to have a hand in it, but you won't have to deal with all the bullshit. What do you think? Most people are just going to be like, yeah, I think I'm going to do that. Because, you know, you weigh the amount of time that you have to enjoy that money with your perceived amount of time that you do or don't have in your life in a good state to go out and have some damn fun, you know, to take some trips and go out in the ocean and get tan and make love and have a fucking awesome time. I mean, you got to pay attention to this stuff. That's just how life works. And the reason that's how that all happens. But, you know, there's no offer if it isn't enticing. There's no offer if it's not impressive. And so one of the things that you want to really look at is, how is it that these companies don't have a good offer? How is it that it makes it appealing to these guys? And the reason that it's appealing is because these giant companies and their juggernauting of these products that they do. You grab onto that small product, you produce a copycat at a much lesser price because you have the funds to buy ingredients at larger amounts, and you undercut your competition, you know, right where they live. And that happens a lot. And there's no patenting. There's no patenting on any type of food stuff. So if you have a great combination of something, food bars, you know, pop chips, frickin', you know, greens blends, protein blends, cookies, pancake mixes, sodas, kombucha, nobody gives a fuck. They'll take it from you. They'll make a knockoff of it. There is no patenting of it. That's why when you always hear about Coca-Cola's secret recipe or, you know, things like that, like, that's why it's under lock and key, dude, because people tried to sort of second guess it all these years. They're like, how do they make it taste exactly like that? Because they're the only ones with the recipe. It is under lock and key. So next time, you know, as you go out and about into the natural products world, and you go all floofy and you know, go and check stuff out, or if you're like very clinical, however it is that you go shopping, I want you to start asking that one question. Where did the money for this company come from? Where did the money for this company come from? Where did the money for this company come from? Where did the money for this company come from? Ask it until people are just blue in the face and they're like, shit, I don't know. You know, it's a mystery company. And you're like, well, I can't do that. And the reason is because you want to really understand how that dynamic works and try to, if you think something's really cool and it's a product that you know originated with a smaller independent grassroots company or a small couple, and now you know you see within a year or two a big giant company come along and do a copycat of it, be mindful of where your dollars go. That's some couple's kids' college education. That is probably an investment. I knew people that sold their cars to publish a book. I know people that have really taken some big risks to try to get some things out there into their you know, investments, and that's okay. Like, you know, it, that's kind of, you do that to help get stuff out there. But in these past few years, especially as the economy tanked, this is the other side of it that I saw. And I think it's really, really messed up. I think it's wrong, because stores and, you know, places that were purchasing all these items would go for the companies that could give them those big discounts, and they completely forgot about this whole small grassroots local tiny movement. And if we can't count on the stores to back it, then we got to really look at consumers to back it. And if consumers can't back it, and this is mostly at a wholesale level, then you need to really seek out cool companies to buy from, like online, and make that something that is a thing for you. If you really are into supporting small, awesome companies, find out if you can buy their stuff online or buy it from Amazon or do something like that where they get a larger portion of the product costs. A lot of times you'll actually find a better deal where you don't have to drive and you can just have everything brought to your door, so you can spend your walking around and shopping time doing something different and have more fun. But so beware of juggernauting. Beware of juggernauting and the pirating and copycatting of small grassroots companies by larger giant conglomerates with endless resources, because it's really messed up. It's messed up to these small companies that are very vulnerable. You know, you will lose in the end. The biggest danger of this is that these tiny little companies will just say, fuck you, I'm not putting this energy into this anymore. And you will lose the very single cool company and that very single cool product that you liked so much right off the bat, that brought all this stuff to your attention. And I see it happen too much. I see it happen way too often, where these guys will just say, screw it, I'm just not going to do this. Or they just decide to, you know, go a few different routes, routes that I think are better sometimes. And I just want consumers to really be aware of it. If you don't back your small independent companies, you will lose the ability to pick products from those small independent companies. And if you don't ask where the money came from to launch these companies and to get these new cool products on your shelf, when you see a new company show up, make that be one of your very first questions. Where did the money come from to launch this company? Where did the money come from to make these products? So that you know where that's going. And then be mindful, if you see a copycat product of a product that you think is really cool, just know, you know, if you grab that slightly cheaper version of something that was already cool, you are really hurting a very small company. You are genuinely hurting that company in a really, really big way. A large conglomerate, if their copycat product isn't purchased, they don't give a fuck. It is an inconvenience. You know, they launch it without even expecting to see a return on their investment for half of their fiscal year. It's one SKU out of thousands. And if it doesn't work, oh, bummer. Let's just discontinue that and we'll keep doing the other 4,000 SKUs worth of successful stuff that we do, and we don't care. And they go on their vacations and stuff. But for the companies that only have a couple of SKUs and they've only got a couple of things that they're doing out there, like, that's a huge thing. They can't just slough that off. If you only have two or three SKUs and, you know, one of them gets copycatted and people start buying that cheaper copycat version of it, well, that's it. There goes a third of your sales. And that can be enough to really cause some serious harm. And I just like you to be mindful of that and just think about it. Beware of juggernauting and beware of copycats, because it really, really, really hurts the natural products industry. Shop responsibly and shop compassionately, and really think about what's going on out there. And when you walk into the health food stores, start asking those two questions and making sure that you know who you're buying things from. Because if you keep buying stuff from these big giant companies, it's just, you're going to lose out on some of the coolest stuff that's out there, because there's no way to reciprocate a great mind and good innovation and good energy unless you're willing to work with these smaller companies, and they just can't make the same offerings that these big giant ones. The whole industry is going to become a stagnant, you know, big corporate conglomerate mess, and you don't want that. Believe me, you don't want that. That's why people shop online so much. And at a wholesale level, you're going to lose the ability to cruise in and get everything except good veggies, you know, because that's all that's going to be left. That's the only thing that's going to be left that's unique and still affordable and doable. So, you know, and if you don't think that this is for real, if you don't think that this really pans out, just take a look at all the companies that had to merge this year and that had to do some, that had these buyouts, you know, like Coconut Bliss, one of my favorite companies for ice cream, broke my damn heart and got, they said that they merged with a large dairy company, and it's like there's like 10% left of their company that's all theirs. It's not a merger, that's a buyout. You know, you had just, it just goes on and on and on. There's so many companies that happened with, and I just don't want to see that happen to a lot of other companies. You got to really, really, you know, watch yourself. I could go down the whole list of these guys and them, and, you know, stuff like, everybody knows the things with Burt's Bees. We had Procter & Gamble buying out New Chapter. You had, it just goes down a long, long, ugly road. Well, not ugly. I mean, it's just finance and economics, but it just goes down a long road on that. And I mean, it's not okay. It consistently can really hurt companies, and reciprocally with, you know, independent stores versus chains, stuff like that, you know, there's things that can just happen in the way that these independents, you don't want to see your cool independent stores, your mom and pop stores, you know, go by the wayside. Cause believe me, dealing with them and trying to reciprocate innovation with the small store is way cooler and much easier to accomplish than working sometimes with these larger chains. Don't get me wrong, there's some really awesome, amazing people that are out there with larger chains in certain regions that are total badasses. They're great buyers with incredible discernment. They're compassionate and intelligent. I don't mean that as like a kiss-ass statement. There really are some really fantastic people like that I think literally should be making so much more than they do. for what they're doing, because it is a job that takes a really particular type of skill. Sometimes there's just not, and they just kind of drift in the woodwork. So, you know, for those people where that can injure them, you don't want to have those types of chains dominating everything around there. But anywho, I feel like this has been more than long enough, and I hope that you enjoyed the Jeffrey Von Stetten Epic Podcast Experience, this in our topic of juggernauting and copycatting. So until next time, remember, where'd the money come from for this brand new company? Where'd the money come from? Where'd the money come from? Chant it. One mani padme. Where'd the money come from? And until next time, thanks for tuning in, and I hope you have a freaking awesome week. Thanks. Bye.